I'm Aaron Cathy, and it's day 16,000 and a half of quarantine. And this is Creatives in Quarantine, a podcast about what people in advertising are doing while locked up during these insert distressing adjective here times. This week, I'm talking to two people, Josh Weiss and Sunita Deshpande. Josh is a senior art director, but also a man of many talents. And Sunita is no slouch either. She's a copywriter, she's into improv, and she's an actress. Catch her on season 3 of Daredevil. Seriously. And somehow they connected on Fishbowl and found the way to partner on this lovely book they call The Big Little Book of Strange, Weird, Bizarrely 100% Real Animals, but not really. It's this project that started as a gift for Josh's nephew and has evolved into something they're working on getting published. You can check it out at Josh's site at joshweiss.com. That's joshweiss.com. I get to talk with them about creative collaboration, working together in the time of COVID, how art directors are actually great writers, and what it's like to find a great creative partner. So this is me talking to Josh and Sunita in quarantine. All right, Sunita, Josh, thanks for coming on. So I like to start out every interview with my, which is a question that I think is like, the first question is the worst question, and that is, how has your quarantine been?
It's been all right. Between gigs, I've just been kind of taking the time to learn different things, like trying to teach myself motion graphics and working on like illustration and whatnot. So trying to make it productive.
Sunita?
It's been good during the times I've had a job, which I have right now, a freelance gig, to keep a schedule. And so that's been really good. And then of course this book has been really super, has kept it very interesting and upbeat, but there definitely have been times for insight and pondering and, you know, especially right now, with everything, it's like, there's gotta be some moments in life, you know, and especially if you're a creative person, you're going to feel them probably a little bit more than others.
Yeah, for sure. So like, Josh, You're talking about like things that you're learning. What kind of things are you learning?
So I'd never really had the opportunity to do like any type of motion design. Uh-huh. So just really playing around with After Effects and do like kind of creating some like assignments. I made my dad a birthday gift, which was like an animated family tree using After Effects, and I sent him the link while we were on a Zoom call, not having told him what I had made yet. And so it was kind of fun to watch him tear up as he watched it for the first time.
So. He teared up?
Yeah.
Damn, man. Congratulations.
That's when you know you did a good job.
Yeah. Go ahead and give me a little bit about your background, Josh. Like,
yeah. So I've been art directing since I graduated from Creative Circus in 2013. Before that, I was a professional freelance photographer. Right now, I'm in Los Angeles freelancing. Last year, when I redid my website, I actually made a blog section, and it had mostly been just kind of like, I didn't know what to put in there. And I guess the best thing about what's been going on with the with everything and being stuck indoors is like it's given me a lot of time to create things I can just drop in there, because it's not necessarily like going to become like a portfolio piece, but it's just like, oh, this is like this illustration I worked on. The other week I did like a high-end version of the Flintstones house.
Big Flintstones fan?
Not particularly, but I was kind of like, I used to be really into architecture when I was little. And I think that kind of like comes through, because a lot of what I found myself drawn to is drawing like houses and buildings. And so I was kind of just like looking at different houses I could, you know, draw. And I was like, oh, well, what about the Flintstones house? And I looked at it and I was like, well, it's pretty simple, so I could try a different technique that I'm not as comfortable with, and I won't be as like bogged down in like little details of trying to make it look realistic, because by nature it's not a realistic looking building. So it kind of gave me some leeway to play around with it, and I'm happy with how it came out. I mean, I'm sure someone who's better than me could tell me everything that was wrong with it, but
so Sunita, a little bit about yourself. Josh is the art director. You're the writer.
Yeah. I started off at Miami Ad School. And at the time they were doing the Ad Masters program. So I'm dating myself a little bit here, but you got an integrated marketing communications degree from FIU. And so I think actually after going to University of Florida, I was like super ready for an, you know, copywriting job that I wanted so badly, and nobody was impressed by the book. So I went to Miami Ad School and graduated from there. And got a job after five internships. I finally got a job at Berlin Cameron, and I was there for many years and got to work on everything, super lucky. Everything. I mean, alcohol, got to work on some restaurant stuff. Coca-Cola was what was big at the time that we had. I mean, I was very lucky at print, TV, everything. And then I started freelancing at a bunch of places too. And we were talking about that time. It was, the pond was very, very, very stocked, with fish for freelancing for everybody at that time. So it was super duper easy to just get gigs here and there as I concentrated more on, auditions and acting, and freelance was perfect for me. And then I also taught improv, comedy at Miami Ad School, which was like super, inspiring and fun. I really didn't think I would get out of it what I did. Some freelance gigs I stayed at a little bit longer. So for instance, translation, I was there for 2 or 3 years. Loved that experience. That's Jay-Z's place, in case anyone's listening. And the other stuff, some places I was there for maybe half a year, some places too, you know, freelance is freelance. But the nice thing about freelance is you can hop around. And mm-hmm. I think for me as a creative, if I have that fear that you can lose your job any day, I know it sounds so sick, but like that hustle, like keeps me as a creative, like super duper on my toes, thinking with that fire under my ass, like you better prove yourself again today. And most recently I was full-time at FCB Health for 2 years as a creative director.
Running on fear. I have...
That was different because it was the first time I was doing anything in the pharma world. And mm-hmm. So I was super duper nervous because people in the pharma, it is night and day difference from consumer.
That's another podcast. We will definitely get into that because I want to know all about that. So, talk a little bit about how you met.
I will say Josh is one of the most proactive people I have ever met in advertising. I will say that for him, number one. I'm so impressed by that quality in him. I don't have that quality. I had just come out to LA because I was just ready to move the transition from New York. I just felt the weight of New York getting too heavy on me. And I also wanted to open up acting opportunities for myself. So I had come to LA and I was just sitting there and I was just like, well, I'm here in LA. I want to know what the freelance world is like out here. And Josh saw my post and immediately reached out, and I'm incredibly grateful he did.
Yeah, I saw her post, and this is my second time living in LA, and I know it can be like a really isolating place. And I'm always about like just meeting up with random people because you never know what's going to come from it. Like last summer, I got a message from someone on LinkedIn, like right after I got laid off. I had posted something about how like, well, I have a lot of free time, so if you want to like get coffee or something, just reach out to me. And Cindy Hamill, who's a freelance writer out here, she messaged me and we met up and we ended up talking for like 3 hours. And that morning I'd had this idea for something. And so at the end of the talk, I was just kind of like, hey, I had this idea this morning. Do you want to work on it with me? And she just like, her eyes lit up. And like over the next 2 weeks, we just like busted our ass building out this thing. And that became the Trump Rio Grande Hotel. And like within an hour of launching it, like Adweek had called us and like wrote a story about it. And so I don't know, like you never know when you're going to like click with someone mm-hmm. and like something cool could come out of it. Not that like, that was my motivation for messaging you. I'm just kind of genuinely like to meet people. But it just kind of worked out again in that regard.
Yeah.
And we're talking about The Big Little Book of Weird, Strange, Bizarrely, 100% Real Animals, But Not Really. A book that I think was for your nephew?
Yeah. So my nephew is turning 2 in a week. This is like saying towards the end of last year, I had this idea that I was like, oh, he's going to start getting to that age where he's, actually, I don't know anything about childhood development, so I have no idea. What
Neither do I. It's okay.
I was just like, well, why don't I make him like an alphabet book? you know, I was kind of sitting on it for a while, and then finally kind of was like, oh yeah, hey, Sunita, do you want to work on this thing with me? Because like, I was familiar with the work because I'd seen her book and thought it might be something that would like appeal to her. And she was all about it too. And when the new year rolled around, we met up and we just like over the course of like 2 hours, just went through every letter of the alphabet and figured out what the animal would be, and kind of like with a vague description, just so we kind of had guidelines to like start out on. And then it took me about like another month before I kind of figured out the style I wanted to do the animals in. And that's when I started sending you stuff.
And then chimerias, right? Are they called chimerias? I don't know if I'm saying the word right. Two animals, like two, but they're not all combinations of two animals.
Yeah. A chimera is what some of them are, because it's like, yeah, like the quail is a quail and a whale. So like that's a chimera. But like my favorite is like the weasel, which is just like a weasel with breathing problems. So like
asthma commercial.
Yeah. So it's not like they're not all like just hybrids, you know. They're just kind of like weird combinations of things that we thought were funny.
The queasel for pharma. You should use that.
The weasel?
The weasel for pharma.
The weasel for pharma.
They love their animals.
So okay, so let's go back. So in January, so you've had this idea. In January, you reach out to Sunita via Fishbowl.
No. So we've been hanging out in person.
Okay,
we first met in October, I think.
Okay.
We've been kind of hanging out. And I think I sent her like a text or something in mid to late December. And she was in New York at the time. She's like, sounds good. When I get back, let's, you know, meet up when we can talk about it. And so we met up, and yeah, so
we met up at that buffet place that I like wound up loving.
That was different. Sweet Tomatoes, which is no longer in business.
No, it was another anyway.
We were rest in peace, Sweet Tomatoes.
Yeah, Sweet Tomatoes and Two Plantation are the same thing. I actually worked at one in high school, but we met up at the Literati Cafe. When we went to Sioux Plantation was when you were paying me back for doing that postcard for you.
Oh, yes. Yes. Okay. I love food, so.
Okay. And there are already things in exchange, like postcards and all kinds of things.
Yeah, well, she needed, like, a promo piece for her acting.
She did an incredible job on, and I, like, was like, you need to just help actors with your creative skills. But then we went to the cafe to get coffee, and that's where we came up with our animals.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that was in January. So when did, you know, COVID hit? COVID hit in like March.
Beginning of March is when LA shut down. And Sunita was just like, I need to get the hell out of here before I can't. So you moved out pretty quick.
Yeah, I was in an Airbnb and I was like, I know this thing is coming and like, I just need to get out of here. Because again, I had to move out of my apartment in New York. My lease was up and I didn't want to get charged anything more with all my shit in my apartment. So yeah, I wanted to hop a plane as soon as possible.
So what's it like building a book? You have the concept of the book and everything. What's it like writing a book with a creative partner over video, you know, or however you did it? What was the process like?
So we had a Google Doc that had all the animals. And as I would finish an animal, I'd put the image up on the doc. She would put up when she got around to doing the writing, she would, you know, put that on the doc and we kind of look over each other and, you know, make any comments. For the most part, I think we were both pretty happy with the work that each other one was doing. So there wasn't like a whole lot of critiquing. Like we weren't scared to like tell each other. It was just my vision for the write-ups originally were not what she ended up producing, but I liked what she had so much better that it was just kind of like, do your thing because you know what you're doing, and I'm not like, I don't need to micromanage you with, which I love. It's great when you like work with someone who just is really good at their craft and you can let them do the work that you know, wanted them to do without having to like take over and tell them this, that, or the other. It's just like, it was just such a nice thing to be able to see those write-ups and just like laugh at my ass off every time I saw the new ones and just know that like I had picked the right person to work on this with.
You know what's so dope about, like, I mean, to me, what I love about partnering with anyone when you feel that vibe, when you first, like, how many times have we gone into an ad agency and we've been freelance partnered up with somebody that we've never met before? This has happened to me before. And you just vibe and you just pick up. I think that's such a good quality of any freelance person, to come in and go, okay, this is how this person vibes, this is how I vibe, and then you figure out how you work together. Mm-hmm. I think that's why a lot of freelancers who do incredibly well do well, because they can vibe off of anybody and figure out what their, you know, emotion is, or how they respond to things, or how they take feedback. Those are emotionally intelligent people that I was talking about this the other day to a friend of mine. I was like, there was this valedictorian at my school who, yes, great grades, everything, but when it came, push came to shove in the real world, this person didn't end up doing so well because they didn't have the ability to respond to just outside circumstances, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
And they had the greatest grades. They had the highest AP scores. The teachers loved them. But once they got into the real, I remember they go into college, they would come back because they couldn't deal with their roommate or like this new situation. And so to me, part of being a really good freelancer is having that ability to respond to your partner. And Josh's work was so great that I just like took it and with a big smile to distract me from COVID, just wrote poems to it. And I'd also like to say that I think too, when someone is talented, they, like he said, he doesn't need to micromanage me, right? He's like talented. I think he is a talented person who respects like another person's words and doesn't have to sit there and micromanage in something that was supposed to be really fun. You know, I think that was a nice thing about this too, is it was ease. There was no, oh my gosh, we have to make millions of dollars, or oh my gosh, someone's riding my ass because of it. It was because it was just, this was a fun book for a kid, you know?
Yeah.
The nice thing about trusting your partner is just always that. It's always like, hey, I hate this, I don't like this, I love this. And it's not personal. You're just working together.
Mm-hmm. This turned from, it was just a book for a kid, but it's not just a book for a kid anymore, right? That's kind of, yeah. It's grown from a birthday present to something bigger. Talk about that a little bit.
So one of the things in like my process for like my personal things is I kind of like to show it to a few friends just to, you know, get their opinion. I don't necessarily always like listen to the feedback I get, but if like a lot of people are harping on the same thing, I'll be like, okay, maybe I should look at that more. With this, when I was showing them, they were all getting like super excited about it and wanting me to keep them updated. And then when I got Sunita's, you know, write-ups and poems for each one, you know, I sent it to the same people. It was like, what do you think? And they're like, I want a copy. And once we had everything done, I was kind of like, well, hey, you know, people were asking about this. Why don't, you know, we're taking pre-orders now just to see. And we ended up getting almost $3,000 in pre-orders for the first print. And it's gone up now because we're about to do a second printing. And
that's awesome. Is it, is there a Kickstarter or anything for it? Or are you just collecting it, like any site or anything?
Right now, just doing it all manually. We're getting them printed through Blurb. We're basically selling it at cost. I think we were in the red about $20 after shipping. Mm-hmm. For the last round, but considering how many, you know, books we sold, $20 isn't a big deal. For the second round, we're upping the price just a little bit to try not to have to pay out of pocket. With printing, you really only make money when you're like doing mass volumes. And so that's why we need to get like a publisher on board if this was ever something we wanted to like really monetize. That's a step for another day, but it's something that a bunch of people have told us we should look into. So we're like, okay, I guess we should do that now.
Go ahead.
One of my friends is a pediatrician and she said, you know, after the whole COVID craziness is over, she would love to have some for her offices, you know? And then another friend of mine who just got her book said that her kids were like fighting over it. Mm-hmm. So that's a good sign too. So I think it's just getting it out there is like very important, and I'm glad we did, because once people actually have something in their hands, it's, you know, exciting to want to buy more.
How does that work with the static? So does it have moving parts? Because I'm looking at Duck Nut right now, and his tongue wags.
Yeah, that was me trying to like
I love it.
Again, play around with After Effects and like learn more motion. The book itself is, you know, non-moving, but I think as a promotional piece, because we've basically put the entire book online and we were sending it out to people and people were still buying it because they wanted a physical copy. And that was always one of the concerns, was like, well, if we're showing everything, does that give people less of an incentive because they could just go on their phone or tablet? But I think people, especially with kids, they are so nostalgic for like being read a book and not off of a phone that people like still want a physical copy of it. So
yeah.
When I was at Hallmark, so when I was in college, UF, there was a Hallmark scholarship and it was to go to Kansas City for the summer. It was a minority scholarship and 4 kids got to go to Kansas City for the summer and write books. And they would always ask like in these meetings, like about the e-cards or like sending them on email. And they would always say at Hallmark, on all of our years of testing, because we have looked into this left and right, virtual cards, whatever, Oculus cards, there will be nothing like holding something in your hand from someone. Like there's just nothing like getting a card in the mail. Yeah. And I think I would like to echo exactly what he said. There's just nothing like holding something in your hand, especially with the tablets and everything these days. People are craving something. I think in this time too, this whole COVID time has made people especially nostalgic.
Yeah, there's some comfort to it. I was going through, because this book reminds me of some favorites that I had. One of them is called The 11th Hour, and it's this beautifully like illustrated, amazing kind of book. So I was going through and I was like, oh man, I miss having physical copies of books, you know, from Kindle and that sort of thing. So I lived in Kansas City for like 12 years, but we could talk
about that. Okay. Gates Barbecue.
So are there any, you know, collaborating remotely, you know, during this period of time? I'm sure that people are getting more and more used to it now. I mean, I think we've started to do it. It feels like, you know, at the intro of every show, I kind of say something like, it's day 13,000 of quarantine, because it really feels like that. But I think like when you guys were doing, you know, collaborating consistently like this, like using Zoom, do you feel like there, you know, are there any pros or cons that working like this together that you would take away and that you would apply to like, you know, advertising once you get back into the office?
Do you want me to go first or do you want to go first?
Go for it.
Go for it, man. Sorry, I should direct. I'm a writer. I'm not an interviewer.
Sorry.
I'm getting better.
Great job.
I think one of the things that helped us is that we were able to meet in person before we went our own ways and kind of were doing our own things. It definitely made it easier and we were able to have a conversation in person. You, to a degree, you can do that via video, but I don't think you're ever going to be able to fully replace. It's kind of like what we're talking about with the books. You're not going to ever fully be able to replace being face-to-face with someone. There's just so much about language that is nonverbal that you miss when you're looking at a screen that only has a person's face. Like, you know, you can tell someone's excited about something if they're like, you know, their hands are like being very expressive, but that's not a natural way right now on this call to do that.
He's holding his hands up in front of his face. Like, I don't know what to do with my hands.
Yeah. That's great. And I think that really helped us, because that really, you know, like I said, we were able to come up with the animals in like, you know, 2 hours at the coffee shop. And I don't think we never actually did talk on the phone or via video when we were working on it. We were just kind of texting back and forth or leaving notes on the Google Doc. But like I said, a lot of that comes from just your chemistry with someone when you're working with them. You know, for us, we trusted what the other one was doing, so there wasn't as much of a need to be like overly communicative. I know people who like really love working from home. I personally am looking forward to being able to work with people in person, but like when you're actually trying to do the executional work, you can be wherever and do that, because most people are just going to put a headphones on at their desk anyway. Mm-hmm. How's that any different than jumping on a call at that point? But like for the actual collaborative part of it, I think it's really important that you be face to face when you can.
Yeah. And it goes back to what you're saying about trust, like having a certain amount of faith in the person that you're working with, especially if you're just working over Google Doc. You know? Which I used to hate Google Docs, because I think that I missed the solitary, as a writer, I missed the solitary feeling of just like writing and then sharing, but like the ability to like write and share simultaneously. This is an average. So this podcast is sponsored by Google Docs.
I think with all of these online collaborative tools, they have the power to basically magnify it. So if you have a really good working relationship with someone, it makes it super easy and seamless. But if you don't have that chemistry, it's going to create a lot more problems because you're not going to be able to address things immediately or in a face-to-face way where it's going to start coming off as like passive aggressive, or you're not going to be able to explain what you want. So there are goods and bad parts of it. Is just kind of going to depend on who you're working with, whether it's going to be good or bad.
I thought you were going to say something.
Because look, this is exactly what I've talked about. For example, Facebook. It's an amplifier, right? So like, it's not Facebook's fault. It's like kind of human nature's fault, right? Because if you are generous and you do a fundraiser, or it can be used for good. But at the same time, it can be used for, stalking an ex or what, it can be used for whatever human nature is at that moment. And like when you were saying the passive aggressive thing, so like this whole entire project has been such a dream to do with Josh, that it's like, it just seems so seamless. And it comes down again to the human law that the trust is there. Because there is nothing like a passive aggressive person on a Google Doc. There is just nothing like it. And I know this too, and I'm all about women in advertising. I'm a woman of color. I'm all about women. I'm just all about it. But there is just something about that passive aggression. I've had creative directors, like a female creative director, like correcting my words as I'm writing them.
I've had male creative directors too.
And I'm like, as a writer, you need to, like you said, to have that solitary moment to actually think to yourself. So what I would do is just have my own word and then just write and then put the whole thing up after but that creative process, having it, someone interfere with it as you're doing it as a writer, there's nothing more irritating. It's like someone kerning your work as an art director or designer as you're trying to kern it yourself. That frustration is there. So it really comes down again to the human nature, that trusting human nature, because again, if you've had anyone ever micromanage you and you have put enough time into your career where you know what you're doing, like just give you a sec and then you'll give your work over to be looked at, that lack of trust, there's nothing worse for a relationship. It just, nothing, there's nothing. And I'm old school in the sense of like, I'm a writer, like, I love old school poets. I love Wordsworth. I love Byron. I love Shelley. I love Keith. Those guys would just go off into a cabin and just write by themselves and then come back, I'm that kind of writer as well. So for me, this kind of, hey, here's a piece of art. Can you do something with it? I dig that. And sometimes on snow days too, my old partner at FCB and I he wouldn't be able to come in from Jersey. So he would put together old school marker comp, scan it over to me. I would come up with lines, scan it, he would just put it together. I dug that process because sometimes that separateness, it creates you have your own little bubbles. And when you come together, great stuff can be created, That for me is I loved that process. Not always, but for me, that process was super great.
Yeah, I feel like, collaboration often, it just comes in the form of a brainstorm for some reason, but people don't realize that collaboration in a creative sense could be one person doing their job and another person doing their job and doing them really well. And I love when, Josh said, this isn't exactly how I would have written it, or this isn't what I even thought in my head, but it turned out way better. It's sort of like, those are the things that I think are the most fun elements of creating something with somebody else, the surprise at what that person brings.
Some of the greatest lines I've ever heard have been uttered under their breath by an art director.
Oh yeah, I've had one today.
And they're like, what about blah, blah, and you're like, oh my God, that's it, you wrote it, done. Because the pressure isn't on them. So they're just like, duh, duh.
I had a copywriter once tell me that a lot of art directors can make really good copywriters because we think we're so bad with words that we try to say the idea in as few as possible to get around the fact that we don't want to deal with them. Whereas like writers, because you inherently love verbiage, like you tend to, it gets inflated and you're having to figure out how I cut the sound because I love every word that I put on here. And it's kind of just like the two opposite sides of it.
Yeah.
You make it so pithy. It's like, bam. And you're like, fuck, that's the line, you know, came up. But then at the same time, I've also had art directors who are super cool who are like, can you take a look at this visual? And I'll be like, oh, why don't you put the white space, you know, like whatever. And it'll become stronger too. So I think it's like a pressure thing too sometimes.
Yeah. My partner is his second language is English. He's Brazilian, so he speaks Portuguese and like, but he throws out lines all the time. I'm like, you're a genius. You're a genius. And he doesn't even know when he's doing it. I mean, I think that like with an art director, you know, you're a concept or two, and to be able to concept means you can think, and to be able to think means that you can write. And so I think, you know, that's, to me, a lot of the best art directors are also writers at the same time.
Oh, well, everyone's a creative, right? And that's what's so cool. Like, because that actually comes back to something I had read in an advertising like journal years ago. And it was about brainstorming. And it was saying how it's better to not brainstorm together. It's actually better to brainstorm separately and then come together with your ideas to see which nuggets like fit to each other, you know, because you might see something that you think is stupid and then they're like, wait, no, there's something in that. And then you shake the biggie bank and the piggy bank, the money comes out.
Yeah.
So yeah, like it's, I think I really vibe with the fact that you go off, think by yourself and then come back together.
Yeah. I was going to just have you guys read the book, but I'm not going to do that. But I do want to get a couple of your favorite animals though. Just like three, each of you can tell me your three favorite animals. And then I want to make sure that everybody has the link to get the, to look at it. If possible, everyone can see the book or purchase it. So, but that'll be after in the outro. So, but yeah, go ahead.
Why don't you go first, Sunita?
I really liked Ducknut because for me, Ducknut is a lesson. There's like a moral lesson, like eating the donuts and becoming like, something, it wasn't too good. And that's when I think it struck me, like when I was writing those, like, oh, there has to be like a little, that could be cool. There's a little lesson for the kid to learn.
Mm-hmm.
I went, oh, okay. Yeah, this is a good vibe. And then the True Can, which was, I thought great because it was like about telling the truth. And if you don't tell the truth, you know, his feathers fall off. And even white lies and even omission is a lie. I thought that was kind of nice, like how, you know, it just doesn't look good on you when you lie, but a lot of people don't like it when you tell the truth too much. The ones that stay are real friends. So I would say like those are like two of my top, and then a extensional, that was like the egg. That was like, I think my top favorite.
If you actually look really closely at the existential in the crack, there's like a little eyeball peeking out.
I haven't seen that. I'm going to have to go back and look.
I'm looking at it right now. No way. I can't see it. Hold on. I'm going to blow. Well, it's audio medium. I'm going to edit this. I'm editing it. Edit mark right now. I'm looking. I can't see it. There's like it's a little dent. Oh, wow.
The biggest part of the crack, you'll see. Yeah. It's just like a tiny little eye peeking out.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I was like, if I got one framed for an office one day, it would be existential. Like that would be the one.
Yeah, it's super cool. It's super cool. What about you, Josh?
I'm gonna say them all first, and I'll explain why for each one. But the emu, the kilt walla, and the weasel. Emu because, and this is something that like my girlfriend complains about. She's like, kids are gonna get really confused because obviously emu sounds like emu and not emoo. So I think that's really funny. But also the fact like the idea of an electric cow just makes me laugh. Kilt walla just because like the expression on its face as it's like, especially in the animated version where like the kilt's blowing is just like, I don't know. And then the weasel, just, I don't know why the weasel, it just like every time I look at it, I just think there's something funny about a weasel holding an inhaler.
It is funny. I like hippopotamus.
My friend loves that one. It's she, like, so funny. Got so psyched about that
one. I was scrolling down, and I was like, Duck, no, it's hilarious. And I was like, Hippopotamus is like, you know, you could make this into, like, an animated short series if you wanted to.
Well, that was one of the things that we, like, we've talked about a little bit, and that's kind of interesting to me, is that it's not just an alphabet book. We created 26 different characters, like, and not to... I don't want to conflate it with like thinking like, oh, we just made the next, you know, Marvel Cinematic Universe. But like, you've created an entire world of these like animals that all kind of like live together and visually feel like they belong in the same space. Mm-hmm. And so it's just like, if someone wanted to make a cartoon out of it, there's that possibility. But you know, it all starts with like, you know, getting an agent who can figure out who you can shop it to.
Do you think that you might? I mean, you create a world, you create characters, you know, a comic book, you know, posters, some that kind of thing. Do you feel like there's any future going from here to anything else? Or do you care? You just want to make this thing and you know.
You know, there's tons of potential. Whether it happens or not is another story. If the momentum got behind it, sure. Like, let's do it. But at the same time, I'm like, I'm not going around putting money that it's going to happen, just because for something like this to really take off, so many things have to go right in the exact right order. And that's not something we have any control over. And you can really only take it one step at a time. So, you know, if we can find a literary agent and if they can find someone who will publish it, and if it takes off where it gets the attention of like a production company to be like, hey, we want this, then sure, yeah, but that's a lot of ifs along the way. Like, if it happens, that'd be great, but I'm not gonna like bank my future on it right now.
It's so much like acting for me too. I feel like so many of the similarities, like of getting an agent and like going out there and auditioning, and like so many of the actors that have really had careers that have taken off, that I knew from back in the day from like UCB, like Donald Glover and Aziz, and they have all taken matters like seriously, seriously into their own hands, because there's so many ifs out there, like Josh just said, that like it's everything has to line up. Mm-hmm. Like it's a very non-linear path for books. My sister was a teacher for many years too, and she knew the books that kids gravitated toward. Seems like a lot of my friends or kids are gravitating toward this book for sure. But it was always like about something different or being a different person or like something about an animal being different. But she would tell me all the time, just the children's book author race that's a tough race.
Yeah, but you guys made it for fun.
Yeah, it would be great if Oprah like falls in love with it. I wouldn't mind.
So Oprah, I know you listen to this podcast. Hit them up.
She loves it.
She's in Chicago. I do want to say really quickly that Sunita is an actor. You can see her in Daredevil season 3. Anything else you want me to say?
Yeah, and then I totally still love to do advertising, and I have I would love to work for you and hire me.
There you go. I think it's really cool that you both made a book. You made a book during quarantine.
You know what the best part is? Like seeing these little kids' smiles, like with this book. I can't even, my friends are sending me pictures. Have you gotten any pictures, Josh?
Maybe like one or two of, like, even though Blake's, so one of the things about it is because Blake's birthday is, like I said, it's not till next week. Our goal is always to be finished with it by May so that we could actually have a book in his hand for his birthday. But that was like before we realized that other people wanted copies. So I had to like tell my brother about his kid's gift a month early. So, because I was just like, I have other people who actually want to buy this now. So we kind of need to like get it out there. And I don't think I'm going to be able to like keep it a surprise from you if all of a sudden I'm selling it on, you know, my Facebook.
Yeah.
So, I've gotten a few. If you want to send me the photos that you got, that'd be great. But
oh my God, they're so cute. And I'm getting permission from the parents, but like literally like sparkles, like just such cute like pictures of them smiling with their book. And I was like, wow, I've never gotten this feeling from advertising before. Yeah. So like that was definitely like that was a nice moment.
Yeah.
And I was very anti even having a kid until about a year ago. So.
And now you can make this book and give it to them.
Maybe, yeah.
And you can help parents who are stressed out during quarantine and just needing to entertain their kids with something other than YouTube or anything else. So thank you guys so much for being on here. Really appreciate it. And yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
So nice to meet you.
All right, that's it. Thank you to Josh and Sunita. Check out their book at Josh's site, joshweiss.com. You can also find a project he mentioned earlier on the show called the Trump Rio Grande Hotel. They got a ton of press. That guy's super prolific. He's available for freelance and full-time. You just got to hire that guy. And check out Sunita on season 3 of Daredevil. She also has a short film called Sorry for Pahlavi, which won Best Comedy Short at the Oscar qualifying Rhode Island Flicker Film Festival in August of this past year. Man, these two are prolific. And if you're also prolific and you want to share your side project you're doing while we're all still in quarantine, contact me at aaronkathy808@gmail.com. Thank you very much for listening. Kay, thanks. Bye.